Hi, this is Hugh Cornwell, and welcome to this Mr. DeMille FM podcast. If you have any comments, suggestions, or simply want to get in touch, then please email info@mrdemillefm.com. This episode is an interview with Alan McGee, legendary founder of Creation Records, whose life story has been brought to the screen as Creation Stories. I hope you enjoy the show. Well, today I'd like to welcome Alan McGee, former boss and creator of Creation Records, the most successful indie label ever, responsible for signing the Jesus and Mary Chain, My Bloody Valentine, Primal Scream, and most crucially for discovering Oasis. Alan, welcome.
Hey, Hugh.
Welcome to the couch.
Total honour.
You've brought along a list of some of your favourite movies.
Yeah, man.
And we're going to discuss those, and also Creation Stories, which is the movie based on your life story.
Yeah.
Now, you single-handedly took on the corporate record business and won handsomely, may I say. Oasis have gone on to sell more than 70 million records, which is, funnily enough, an estimate of Ennio Morricone's record sales, you may like to know. So, I'd like to ask you is, what was the first film you remember seeing in the cinema?
I think it was The Sound of Music.
No. Can you remember the circumstances?
I think it must have been about... I think it was a Saturday afternoon. And I think I was probably about seven. I think at that age I was, you know, I was just... I went with my mum and dad, I think. Or my mum, yeah, probably more than my dad. And it was Sound of Music, and it was...
Do you remember liking it? You know, watching it and liking it, or it was, you know, you couldn't understand it, or what?
I think I kind of liked it. I mean, I think I probably quite liked the tunes at the time.
A lot of music in it. Yeah,
and it was Julie Andrews, wasn't it? And
yeah.
I mean, films at that age, it seemed just such vast continents, don't they? Do you know what I mean? Mm. And that was probably where I was at with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There a couple of things I've found out about the film, which is quite interesting. It saved 20th Century Fox from ruin after Cleopatra, because Cleopatra cost so much.
Is that right?
Christopher Plummer chose to act in this film instead of playing Harry Palmer in The Icarus Fire, which, yeah, was an amazing part.
Yeah.
Sean Connery, Bing Crosby and Richard Burton were all considered for the role that Plummer took as Captain Von Trapp. And at the time, this is quite interesting, at the time, both Christopher Plummer and Julie Andrews were unknown.
God, no idea. I thought she was the star of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the mansion that appears in the film, it belonged to Hedy Lamarr. So that's a few things. Let's hear a bit of music from The Sound of Music to bring back a memory for you.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favourite things. Cream-coloured ponies and crisp apple strudels, doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel with noodles, wild geese that fly with a moon on their wings. These are a few of my favourite things. Girls in white dresses with blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes, silver white winters that melt into springs. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so bad. Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favourite things. Cream-coloured ponies and crisp apple strudels, doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel with noodles, wild geese that fly with a moon on their wings. These are a few of my favourite things. Girls in in white dresses with blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes, silver white winters that melt into springs. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so bad.
Alan, in the days of creation, obviously you're really busy running around doing what you did then. And was there much time to see movies and go to the cinema?
Yeah, I mean, I saw some fantastic movies, you know, back then. I mean, do you remember that film, Nil by Mouth?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when I saw Nil by Mouth, that was a life I was leading.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was why that film was so brilliant. Mm. Because I recognised that. I was like, that is, apart from like me being a rock and roll manager guy, That council estate cocaine life and football as well, which I was never really that football, but I was into it a little bit. And, you know, that was a life that I recognised that as a way of working class young men living a bit on the edge, you know, and it was council estates and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And so I recognised that as that's what I was doing at the time.
Yeah.
And so that film kind of...
Interesting.
I thought that was an amazing film, though. I was absolutely
it was written and directed by Gary Oldman, and that's the only time he's ever written and directed a film.
One of my favourite ever films.
So based really on truth about his upbringing, I think.
But I think it was everybody's upbringing that was involved in that culture at that time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
London, music, acting, you know, doing drugs. And I think we were all living kind of similarly. Do you know what I mean? And that's how...
Yeah.
That's why it was a great film, because he wasn't sugarcoating it.
No.
It was raw. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, it was a passion of his. Apparently, he injected £1.5 million into it himself.
Christ.
And he got Luc Besson to co-finance the film in return for saying he'd appear in a film called The Fifth Element. So he wanted to get it made by hook or by crook.
Yeah.
So obviously, he was passionate about it. And apparently, the thing about that film is the F word is used 428 times.
But you know the thing is with that, you know, I used to have this drug dealer called Terry Chemical. But he's a scoundrel. I kind of liked him. Unfortunately, I think he's fell in really bad times and is now homeless in London, you know, still a bit of a crackhead. But Terry Chemical was straight off of the script of that film.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It was
that's how real life that was. Do you know what I mean? You know, and the bit Kathy Burke and Ray Winston.
Kathy Burke, yeah.
They were, I mean, and the whole domestic violence stuff that we'd all seen it, well, I'd experienced it. But it was just all, you know, it was like that. That was a snapshot of London 1990, I thought.
What do you want if you don't want money? What do you want if you don't want gold? Say what you want and I'll give it you darling. Wish you wanted my love, baby. What do you want if you don't want earning? What do you want if you don't want bells? Say what you want and I'll give it you darling. Wish you wanted my love, baby. Well, I'm offering you this heart of mine, but all you do is play it cool. What do you want, oh boy, you're making a fool of me. One of these days when you need my kissing, one of these days when you want me to, don't turn around cause I'll be missing. And then you want my love, baby. Well, I'm offering you a diamond ring, but all you do is turn me down. What do you want, oh boy, you're going to town on me. One of these days when you need my kissing, one of these days when you want me to, don't turn around cause I'll be missing. Then you want my love, baby. Oh well, then you want my love, baby.
Well, that was a true story, really. I mean, a work of fiction, but it could have been a truthful. Yeah. And the thing about Creation Stories, the movie that they've just made about your life,
yeah,
it's a really engaging film, and there's a lot of memorable moments. And it really is a remarkable story. And if you didn't know that it was true, you would think it was made up. It's so remarkable.
Half of it is open to interpretation, if you know what I'm saying.
Okay.
You know,
so based on.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff. I mean, actually, what's weird is a lot of this stuff that looks like it's made up, what Jimmy Savile actually did happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, we did go to Checkers, me and Kate, and Jimmy Savile, you know, was the kind of guest owner, which is weird. And He walks in here. I was talking to Blair. I'd got there about 7:30, 7:25 to 8. And the second guest, I didn't know who else was coming.
Can I ask you about the book that it's based upon?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, how long did that take you to write? And did you do it with any ghostwriting help or anything?
No, I didn't do it with a ghostwriter. I did it with an editor guy.
Okay.
So I started doing it. And I said to them when I did it, I'll do it, but you understand that I can't really write. I mean, I can write, but I'm not a writer. But I'll write down, and then at a certain point, you have to bring in somebody that...
To put it all together.
That edits it, it puts it... Yeah. I'll just say it, and I'll write it, but you have to make me spell properly and get and put it in context.
That's fair enough.
And that's how we did the book. Yeah. And I'd say it took me about... 4 months, 3 months.
Yep. That's great. That's very quick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the book's been written. It's been published. And then how did Burning Wheel Productions get involved? Did they approach you to option the book?
Yeah. What happened is that I'm friends with Irvin Welsh.
Oh, yeah.
So he said I can do this as a film. And I was like, Irvin got involved. And then Shelley, Burning Wheel, got involved.
Got it.
Then Irvin kind of it's Irvin's movie. Irvin then said, "Let's get Ewan McGregor."
Yeah,
and I went, "I'm not being funny, but I look like this," and he's this big fucking sexy Scotsman,
exactly. Yeah.
And I'm like a typical wee Scotsman with ginger hair.
Yeah,
and then he went right, and then 2 days later, Irvin comes back and goes, "What about Spud?" And I went, fucking perfect.
That's right.
You know, because he, A, looks like me, and B, I actually think he's a better actor.
He's very good.
Yeah.
He's very good in it. Well, I mean, Irvine's definitely stamped his style on the script,
and it
really works.
Yeah.
And you've just answered my next question about how he got involved. So let's pick something from Trainspotting. What would you like to...
I will tell you a good story. The Trainspotting theme by Primal Scream. I was pals with Irvine since 1991. And he phoned up the office and said, I want the Scream and I want Oasis. So we offered it to Noel Gallagher, who turned it down because he thought it was a film about trains.
Yeah.
There was a lot of cocaine going on at the time, and I would say, it's not about fucking trains, right? Yeah. And he'd be like, it's about trains. No, I'm not doing it. I don't want to be in a fucking train movie.
It's the strangest title, really, isn't it?
Oh, brilliant. So I then, all right, whatever, don't be in it, I don't care. And I offered it to him. And then to Bobby, I said, oh, Irvin, my pal, wants to have you in the film. And he goes, we'll be the theme tune to it. And Bobby did it, I think it was 11 or 12 minute train spotting thing. And that went on the album that sold 500,000 copies. But because the record's broke in publishing, it's broken into minutes on the record.
Oh, I see.
And then Bob got something like 20 or 30% of the income.
Because it was so long,
yeah,
the track.
Peter, and that's why he did it.
Well, that's brilliant. He obviously knew what he was doing there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm looking here and I see a film that could possibly be seen in the same category as Creation Stories, and that's 24 Hour Party People, was the film about with Steve Coogan's portrayal of Tony Wilson in the Hacienda club scene and Factory Records. Now, what is it about this movie that you like?
To this day, I manage Happy Mondays. But on top of that, I was big friends with Tony. Tony was a mentor to me, do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Back when I was like just a kid, Tony would say, stop selling your fucking bands to the majors and all that stuff. Mm. And great guy. That whole punk, the two things that really were central to my life really were when I was 15, the punk thing, in 76, 77. And then, and later, when I was about 27 year old, discovering Acid House and Ecstasy.
Right.
And that blew my fucking mind, you know what I mean, you know? And somehow I thought there was a correlation between the two in a weird way, do you know what I mean?
You connected them together.
Yeah, because I thought it was quite a democratic thing, because it wasn't really about stars, Acid House, which punk wasn't really about stars, do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Not compared to the glam thing. And the Acid House really was, it was just a record. You could be the biggest thing in the world one week with just a record and nobody knew who you were.
rides and he rides. He sees things from under glass. He looks through his window inside. He sees the things he knows are his. He sees the bright and hollow sky. He sees the city asleep at night. He sees the stars are out tonight. And all of it is
Now, did you get involved in any of the casting in the movie? Because Ewan Bremner is really good.
He's
as
amazing.
You.
He's amazing.
So were they consulted about, well, obviously with that, as far as that goes?
Not so much. I don't think I've really had that much to do with it. I mean, it was just, they paid me as a consultant, Hugh. They gave me a piece of the back end. But I had said to myself, with Irvin Welsh, I just said, if you're going to hire Irvin Welsh, you have to let him be. So I never changed the script, even though there's loads of stuff in it that, like, I don't hate Tony Blair. I quite like Tony Blair, do you know what I mean? And, you know, I haven't spoke to my dad for years, and I go into the sunset with my dad. But I just let it roll. And then on the casting... I just kind of trusted that Nick Moran knew what he was in. They had to put Nick Moran past me, and I was really dubious about Nick Moran in the beginning because I hate all that Guy Ritchie kind of film stuff. You know, I think the cheeky Cockney stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of it.
No.
And I met Nick Moran, but he's so much more than that, Nick Moran.
Oh yes.
Yeah. I mean, he's brilliant. So.
And he's fantastic as Malcolm McLeod. Just saying.
Amazing.
I mean, Malcolm, I used to hang out with him too, and it was like he'd reincarnated him on the screen. It was remarkable, and I wanted to see Malcolm more because of this.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever I saw Malcolm, I always made a beeline for him to have a drink with him.
Yeah,
because you always knew you were going to come out enriched by having chatted with him.
He's the best storyteller.
He's incredible, wasn't he? And the one thing he said to me that I remember a lot was he said, "You know, Hugh," he said, "when CDs were invented, it destroyed the timeline in music." And I said, "Well, can you explain that?" He said, "Well, the reason is that because nothing was in CD before, now CDs have happened, all the old records are all being released in CD and they're new releases. So they don't have an age anymore."
Yeah. Right.
So it's completely removed the aspect of time. It's made all music ageless.
Yeah, yeah. I would call it an education. He gave me a musical education. Mm. I met him in a Punch magazine interview, Hugh, 95, 96.
Yeah.
And because I was so in awe of Malcolm McLaren, like utterly in awe of him, and he's still for me, he's the number one guy. I don't think I'm anywhere near as good as he'll ever be. But I met him at this Punch interview, and we were doing an interview, and he was a little bit. I was the guy. I'd Oasis, and the biggest band in the world at the time, and they said something to him about, if you had Oasis, how would you do it differently? And Malcolm came up with some airy fairy Malcolmism, right? That was just bonkers, but it was funny, right?
Yeah.
And he said to me, if you had the Sex Pistols, what would you do with the Sex Pistols? And I said,
interesting question.
And I went, I wouldn't let them break up, and I made them the biggest group in the world, right? And Malcolm was like, and so I thought, oh, fucking hell, man, that was, I've just
put my foot in it.
One of my fucking heroes. I've kind of had him away. Because I won the Punch interview, if you know what I'm saying, right?
Mm.
And he gave me his number. And I thought, he's cool. So 2 or 3 weeks later, I called him and went, "Do you fancy dinner?" And of course. And we used to go to the Ivy.
Yeah.
For the next 4 or 5 years, up until I put him up for the Mayor of London.
Really?
And we used to go once a month when I was in town, go to the Ivy. And it was a 4-hour discussion with Malcolm McLaren. 15 minutes I was allowed to talk while he had his dinner, and for the other 3 hours 45 minutes Malcolm would just tell me what he thought about the world, which was, it was amazing, because he is one of the cleverest people I've ever met.
Very astute man.
Yeah.
Now let's go on to another choice here, which is The Godfather.
Amazing.
So tell me something about what you like about this movie.
Well, I think I'm like everybody in Britain, that I suffer slightly from gangsteritis, right? And we all slightly fancy ourselves at different points in our life. Now I'm old. Hopefully I'm not like that, right? But I know when I was a young man, I had slight gangsteritis. Do you know what I mean? And most young people do. That you think you're a little bit hard. I mean, you're not. No, you're not against. Yeah. When you occasionally you get battered by a proper hard man, and it's like, you know, you get put back in your place. Yeah. But I suppose there was an element to it that you kind of romanticised it when in reality they were just fucking murderers, weren't they? Do you know what I mean? But brilliant. I mean, I watched it again recently in lockdown because it's on Apple Store. You can buy the three films for 17 quid.
Yeah.
And I watched them again. Two's the best one.
Two, yeah.
Brilliant.
Great. Well, I found out a few interesting... There's so many stories to do with The Godfather, but there's a few of them. This is an interesting one. The Orson Welles was lobbying really hard for the part of Vito, but Coppola had always had Brando for the part, and he didn't flinch. And interestingly enough, he'd helped Roger Corman make St. Valentine's Day Massacre a few years earlier, and Corman had wanted Brando as Capone back then. So that's maybe where he got the idea from, for Brando as a heavy.
Yeah.
Sergio Leone, the Spaghetti Western famous director, he turned the job down to direct it, and Sylvester Stallone auditioned for a part.
Isn't that
amazing?
Yeah, amazing.
Didn't get in though.
Yeah, I mean, it's so great. I mean, Brando's incredible, isn't it?
They all are, really.
Yeah, it's an amazing...
Casting is perfect. Yeah, it's very
brilliant.
Good.
It's brilliant. So that's a proper American classic, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That's what Hollywood, when they get it right, that's when it's just as good as it ever gets, you know?
I have but one heart, this heart I bring. I have but one heart to share with you. I have but one dream that I can cling to. You are the one dream I pray comes true. My darling, until I saw you, I never felt this way, and nobody else before you ever has heard me say, you are my one love, my life I live for you. I have but one heart to give to you. Vicino mai, facciamo amore, ancora, ancora, per trespassare. So mare, mare, et tenerezza, ma pallarezza, stunga morì. My darling, until I saw you, I never felt this way. And nobody else before you ever has heard me say, you are my one love, my life I live for you. have but one heart to give to you.
Now, most of your film choices that I see involve sort of studies of mavericks.
Is that right?
People who see the world in a special, different way.
Yeah.
And do you think that, you know, that you identify with their struggles, these people in the films?
I didn't know that I'd done that. That's unusual.
Wolf and Wall Street, Joker.
Yeah.
They're all maverick people.
You're right. I probably do gravitate towards that, you know. You know, it's like Wolf of Wall Street. It's just amazing. Do you know what I mean? That's just a character that if I had taken it to the bridge, I would have become that character. I just chose not to, you know, be that much of a crook about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, that's an amazing film.
It's a lovely film.
Maybe I do gravitate towards these characters.
So now, got a Ken Loach movie here.
Yeah, brilliant.
I, Daniel Blake. Your film, Creation Story, is great editing.
Yeah.
Which is always difficult when you're using flashbacks. It's difficult to get the editing right.
Yeah.
But it works really well in Creation Stories. Now, I, Daniel Blake was shot chronologically.
Which is interesting, which
are completely different.
Yeah.
And what is it about Ken Loach's film that you like?
But especially I, Daniel Blake, because that's just the struggle of contemporary poor British working class people. Do you know what I mean? That the woman has got no avenue but to prostitute herself. Do you know what I mean? The guy, he's got to 55, he can't work a computer. He can't fill the form in. Do you know what I mean? You know, the stress ends up giving him the heart attack. I mean, that's the world I've come out of in Glasgow. Do you know what I mean? That's the world that I know. You know, if I hadn't got away from Glasgow, I don't mean Glasgow's that bad because it's not, but if I hadn't got into music, what would I have been doing? I wouldn't have been a doctor. Do you know what I mean? I would have more likely been a labourer or a taxi driver. Do you know what I mean? And that's what I was going to be doing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And more than likely, had I got to 55, I'd have been on benefits and I'd have been struggling because I'm not particularly techie. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I can see what that life is. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And I know people that struggle still, you know, to this day. I haven't cut off with that. So, you know, I know people that struggle. So I just think that's a brilliant take and commentary on being working class.
In Creation Stories, I have to say there's a moment in the film that I thought where it completely exploded.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's in King Tut's.
Oh, right.
And which is, I think, really good. And it's a pivotal moment in the film.
Yeah.
And it was at that point that I thought, this is great.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it changed my life that night. Come on. Yeah. I mean, it was like...
And it comes across in the film.
Yeah. Because what happened is that, you know, I show up and it's Glasgow City of Culture. Everything's 2 hours delayed. And... You know, I see these 10, 12 scallies, Manx scallies, bullying the security.
Almost having a fight with the guy outside.
And the security are like, what do you want to do? Because I've got all the rest of the bands on the bill. Let them play. You know, they didn't know I was coming. There was no missing a train, by the way. That's just Irvin Welsh.
Well, it works really well.
Yeah, no, it's great. And but anyway, I'm... And, they come on upstage about an hour and a half later, the first band comes on, this is Oasis.
Yeah.
And then somebody goes, that opening band. Now, I could have just went, give us another Jack Daniels go, because I was half pissed and I was going out to an acid house club. I was a young guy, I was about 32-year-old. But I just thought, I don't know why. Maybe because I was having boring conversations with the people in the bar. And I thought, and I wandered up. So thank God I did.
Yeah.
And I ran into them and that was it. You know. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, up to that point, Creation probably could have went any which way.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was being really honest, I was probably enjoying it. Could have went any which way as well. Because I kind of like living by the seat of my pants when I was a young guy.
Is it still exciting?
Yeah. It was. When you get older, you don't want to be living by the seat of your pants.
No.
But when you're young, you kind of like it. Mm. And, you know, but then once I found that, and once I signed them, Creation had to get really professional really quickly, you know, because the demand on me, Hugh, was massive. Because suddenly, without really changing that much, we sold 7 million albums.
Yeah.
And at that point, I came out of rehab. You know, I'd made the record, went into rehab, came out of rehab. And we went number one everywhere, and it was like, you know, all over Europe, blah, blah, blah. And it was like 7 million albums in, and I was like, and we had to hire all the professional people and to deal with the success.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the next one really sold 23 million. But it was, you know, I was learning on my feet, really, because I don't think I ever envisioned indie bands. In 92, as big as it got was like The Cure.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Oh, Robert Smith sells a couple of million records.
Yeah.
He was our superstar, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That was a massive band. So I thought that's about as big as it got. And I'd already done a million records with Primal Scream, so I wasn't that far off how big it could get. But then you know, the brothers came along and then it became another thing. Because they connected, I think they connected in... Because they came out of club culture. Noel came out of club culture, the same as me, out of Acid House. Except, like everybody, he'd get bored with the records getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
Tuneless records. And he came out with big, massive anthems.
Okay, next is an interesting one. This is another factual film that seems fictional. Anvil.
Oh, brilliant. I absolutely love that film. I didn't know anything about them. And then I seen a few reviews and I saw a trailer and I bought the film. And it's just, Anvil the movie, it's just amazing. I mean, it's just, we know people like that. Come on.
You couldn't make it up, could you?
No, but we know people like that. That heavy metal bands, 50-year-old guys, they're fat. It's like, they're losing their hair. It's like, it's all gone wrong.
Yeah.
But they're still hiring the producer in for America to come over and make the album. And like, or they're spending their own money. They're doing school dinners. Right? They're working driving the school dinners. But they're doing that to pay for the record.
Now, it's obvious you're passionate about music, and since Creation finished, you've started other labels with even more success. I mean, you just can't... You're the Midas Touch, you know, at the Hives, for example. And then a management company. I mean, so I guess you'll always have an involvement with music.
I love it. I love music. I mean, it's the music's... it's always been my central thing, that I've always loved music, musicians, songs. It gave me my life, I mean, it's like, you know, if I hadn't got involved in music, I don't know where I would have ended up. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't have ended up dead, I don't mean all of that, but I'd ended up in the most boring situation. And because I did music, and I was successful at it, I had this incredible kind of journey, you know what I mean, you know?
So I asked you the last film you saw that you were impressed with, and you picked Joker.
Yeah.
And what's odd about the Joker is that the director, Todd Phillips, he's known for making comedies, you know, before this film. So what a surprise, it's, you know, incredible. That he'd come up with that.
But I know Joaquin. The person he portrays in the Joker is Joaquin.
It's wonderful, isn't
it? Yeah.
Well, Alan, it's been... Thanks for your sparing the time, and we'll go out with something from the Joker.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May, but I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June, I said that's life.
That's life.
And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it get me down. 'Cause this fine old world, it keeps spinning around. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out. And I know one thing, each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
I tell you, I can't deny it. I thought of quitting, baby, but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. And if I didn't think it was worth one single try, I'd jump right on a big bird and then I'd fly. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out. And I know one thing, each time I find myself laying flat on my face, I just pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
That's life. And I can't deny it. Many times I thought of cutting out, but my heart won't buy it. But if there's nothing shaking come this here July, I'm gonna roll myself up in a big ball and